afternoon, everyone. This is Karina, and I have heard many of you join the call. I know several of you have already mentioned your names, but I did want to ask if everyone could quickly say their names just so we know who, so everyone knows who's on the call.
This is Kinsey Carlson-Britting with the University of South Carolina.
This is Thompson with the University of Nebraska Medical Center, Monroe-Meyer Institute in Omaha, Nebraska.
I'm Michaela Collins from Center on Disability and Community Inclusion in Vermont.
Julie Shears and Barb from the Weissman Center in Madison, Wisconsin.
Leslie Dorman from the Center on Disability Studies at the University of Hawaii.
Crescencio De Leon from the Kennedy Krieger Institute, Baltimore, Maryland.
This is Laurie Fleming from the Vanderbilt Kennedy Center in Nashville, Tennessee.
Meet the rest. Melissa Mandel from Institute on Disability in New Hampshire.
Lisa Rascon and Melanie Usher from the University of Arizona Pediatric Pulmonary Center.
Amy Sharp from Texas Center on Disability and Development.
Zeba Argerman from the Boggs Center, New Jersey.
Katie Pietras from South Carolina Lend at NUSE.
Heidi Pearson from West Virginia
Heidi Pearson from the University of Iowa Center for Disabilities and Development.
Beth Stoffmacher, Tarzan Center, UCLA.
Tom Wino from Northern Arizona University.
Linda Hall from UCSF.
Deb Marino from Westchester Institute for Human Development, also LEND program.
Susie Mack from North Dakota NDCPD at Minot State University.
Ann Robinson from Neisonger Center at Ohio State.
Kelly Foster and Carrie Smart Poetry from New Hampshire Lend in New Hampshire.
Jim Lemanowitz from Pennsylvania USAID.
Dina Johnson from the University of Colorado JFK Partners.
Stacy May from the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community at Indiana University. Okay, so with this, I will assume everyone has gotten to introduce themselves. Thank you, everyone. I'm really glad to see we have such a big group on the call today. And as I mentioned, this is meant for you to have the opportunity to discuss. And going by the agenda that I sent out before the call, the first item that to talk about would be the activity core functions. And I know this is more of a USAID topic, so I'm sorry that some folks will probably not necessarily be able to participate in this one. But the activity core functions, and specifically technical assistance versus demonstration services, it is a question that comes up often, and there is still some confusion or lack of clarity in nuances between what's TA and what's demonstration services. So I'd like to invite you, if you could come up with examples and discuss how you enter data, how you decide at your center, you know, when something is TA or demonstration services. So, someone like to start, even either asking a question or just sharing how they enter data at the center?
Corinna.
Yes, I can hear you.
This is Tom from Arizona. When I think about TA, how I enter it, I believe I belong to a lot of advisory groups, like the Governor's Council and everything. My participation on there, I list as a technical assistant. If there's any working groups or committees that I'm on there because of my knowledge and contributions I can make. So I use that as a TA. I put that as a technical assistance opportunity. When we are invited as an institute from a state agency or whatever to participate in that kind of work group, that's also a technical assistance or any of our faculty or staff that participate in those kind of working groups.
Yeah, this is Julie in Wisconsin. That was also one of those things that had come up for us as to when you're a member of a board or part of an advisory committee or whatever else. You know, I would think it would go under TA myself, but we just have, you know, we're trying to pin down which way, you know, officially we're supposed to do it. And in general, of course, TA is what we consider advising groups or agencies, and the demonstration services is when it's one-on-one individual contact.
Julie, when I think of demonstration services too, contracts that we have, that say we have a contract with a state agency and it's to provide some kind of new services or demonstrate a new services, that to me would be the characteristic of a demonstration services. Or a federal grant that calls for provision or implementing a new type of program or service. That to me would be demonstration as well, as which makes distinction from a research project.
Yes, I agree. We also have like a resource center where they do, you know, calls. People call in and ask questions. So that would be obviously more of the demonstration service. We also have a part of our one of our grants helps to do training for devices to help people stay in their own homes. So they go to their homes and do some one-on-one training with the people. And, you know, we would consider that demonstration services.
Can I ask a question? Absolutely. On that last call, if you are giving resources over the phone, you say you're counting that as demonstration? Like if you're doing like an information referral, you're answering questions over the phone?
I've always counted that as information dissemination.
Yeah, we don't have information dissemination that we can use anymore. Or not that.
I thought information dissemination had to do with an actual product.
Right. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Julie in Wisconsin. It would be demonstration services is what I would assume.
So a caller comes in and asks for information or services, defined services. So you have like a resource center that answers all questions.
Right.
How do you claim those calls?
Well, Brenna, can you add to that? I mean,
it's something that I don't think I've really gotten any questions, so I'm not 100% sure. But I also wonder if other direct model services could also work for this because they are direct services, and you're providing some training, some information. So it's a thought. I'm not sure. I can talk with Don after the call, but it seems like an option too.
Yeah, we do it as well. Okay.
This is Deb Marino. We do it as other direct.
Doesn't it depend on to whom you're giving the advice? If they are professionals, isn't that technical assistance?
Mostly if it's basically families that are calling for information and referral, we call it other direct. Professionals, you know, it depends. If professionals, it's one-on-one, and it's technical assistance.
What if your referral line is open to professionals and individuals?
Yeah, which are?
Then we just call it other direct. It's too hard to, keep track of that level of detail for us.
So you're not getting the demographics on the person.
We don't have that. We can't ask how old they are or,
So in the other direct, you're just counting them as a contact.
Correct.
Okay.
But the other direct category still asks for that information, the race, ethnicity, and ages.
Yes, we just put not available.
So, I mean, is there any circumstance which that would be a technical assistance? Just the only circumstance would be if it were to a professional. Hi, this is Kimberly Mills from Virgin Islands.
I think technical assistance has to be to a group of people, not singular one-on-one.
But then somebody said earlier it could be technical assistance if it's a professional. From an agent.
I don't know if that's the case. Or maybe Corinna could, again, clarify that.
I think it sounds like it's a fine line. PA definitely is given to organizations and agencies. When I hear professional, I wonder, is the PA provided to someone as a professional representing an agency? In that case, I think it could be PA if it meets the definition. You're talking with a professional, but the purpose is to help them problem solve something and develop better resources, provide better services. If it's just a professional who's just talking to you and trying to, get some ideas or is non-affiliated with an agency, maybe it is just other direct model services. So maybe others could give a better idea about what they mean when they say professional, to clarify.
This is Nicole from Virginia, and we definitely do technical assistance to professionals. Within groups, like we go into schools and we may talk to one teacher or a group of teachers that are working on one case, like with their deafblind project, for example. And we definitely consider that technical assistance. Now, if a teacher calls and they just want like a quick question that they're asking, like they said, like Corinna just said, but if it's really something that's problem solving, a case that they're working on with a student or something, we definitely consider that technical assistance. Does that make sense? Does that clarify anything? We don't, just because they're professionals doesn't, we don't discount it as TA.
I think I should add that, we try to clarify that TA is provided to agencies and organizations because the prior definition included in the language individuals with disabilities, and that created confusion because the TA is not meant to be provided directly to individuals with disabilities, but rather, you know, affect them, provide better services or resources to them. So that's why we try to clarify TA is to an agency that provides services to individuals with disabilities.
Yeah, that helps.
Okay, I have a question about, say you have 100 phone calls for resources, and the resources are in different goals, such as housing, transportation, health. Would those phone calls all be grouped together, or do you have to separate them all as TA? Does anybody have an answer?
Can you repeat that question one more time?
Okay. Say you have an information referral set up, like in a resource center, where you're getting phone calls that the services you're providing basically redirect people to other state agencies. So the phone calls are coming from consumers and agency people. But the topic are going to vary from housing to transportation to health needs to any one of the area of emphasis. But you can only choose one emphasis.
But you're only directing them to the resources, correct? Like
right.
You're just referring them to another organization.
Right.
We don't count that as TA in Virginia.
No, we don't count that as TA here in Nashville either.
Okay.
I would think technical assistance can be used at all different levels, you know, through state agencies, professionals, or even consumers themselves. If they're calling one of our staff members, say, for instance, in assistive technology, and they have a specific question, they're calling them because of their expertise in AT. And whatever they provide back as far as a response, that to me would be a TA versus referring them on or whatever.
That makes more sense, but if you're just referring them on to another agency, I don't see that as technical assistance.
Referring
them to other resources.
And just to clarify, if you are providing, various types of technical and expert information, but it's to, say, a lay person versus a professional affiliated with an organization, it would not be counted as TA. Is that correct?
That's how we look at it in Virginia.
Okay.
I mean, even if it's an organization calls us and asks us, well, you know, I need some information on housing or something, and we just refer them to someone else, we don't count that as a particular TA activity.
No, that doesn't sound like it would be. I guess I'm thinking more, you know, if you have a parent, you do an in-depth consultation on special ed law, that would be other direct versus TA.
That's how we would look at it in Virginia. I mean, okay. I know that they're all, you know, it's kind of different, but that's how we would look at it in Virginia, if that helps.
Okay, that does help. Thank you.
This is Karina. I wanted to add one more thing here, which I think is a common concern among centers. We've heard of this. You do a lot of work, and you wonder where that can fit in years, what core function. And unfortunately, some things just do not fit in years and do not need to be reported, and that's fine. So you want to look at the core functions, at the definitions, at the logic model, which basically dictates the reporting requirements, and start from that to think of what you need to report. Because AIDD is aware that you do more work than what's reported, but they really only want to see those items listed in the lodge model. So some things, you know, they can be even more work for you than just some calls. But if they're not required for reporting, you do not need to enter them. And that is fine.
Can I just say, this is, again, Julie in Wisconsin. I guess people were saying that if you had a resource center and were asking or, you know, answering on a lot of phone questions or people coming in as they do here, actually into the resource center, and they sit down and they do one-on-one with families that have come from our clinics. And to put it under other direct model services, I was just pulling that up. And I don't know how you could actually count it under that, under that core function, because, you know, it, especially if you didn't have that you know, race and age, you can't, there is no way to do the, you know, not available. And if you don't put those numbers in, you're not counting anybody. Mm-hmm. So I don't, I just don't see how that would be one we could use.
I think that, I mean, I understand what you are saying, but I think you can simply collect the number of individuals served as the total without providing the breakdown of race and ethnicity if you don't have those.
So just leave all of that blank because there is no, you know, NA box to check.
Correct, but I'm pretty sure that that you can save the record without entering the numbers.
There's a box that says unrecorded for both race and ethnicity.
Yes, but not age. Correct?
Correct, not for age.
There is unrecorded for...
And they all have to be exactly the same, otherwise they, yeah. All right.
Okay, so may I ask you, Deb, are you able to save the age if you don't enter? I haven't tested, but it sounds like it's required. Are you able to just skip that?
Well, a little warning message comes up, says, you know, they're not equal. You know, ages does not equal race and ethnicity, and I just hit OK, and it continues to save it, because when I open the record back up, the information is there.
I'm wondering, because we also upload this stuff into the MCH reports, and they don't upload anything that isn't complete or has any error in it. So another part of this might be if we put it in that and it doesn't, you know, it shows that it's not a complete report, even though it accepts it, it won't get uploaded into our electronic handbook.
Actually, the activity records are not uploaded, are not included in the data export. Only trainee, product, and faculty and staff records are included in the data export. For activities, you enter them in years, and then you can run the standard reports and get aggregate numbers to enter in the EHB. Now, to get back to your question, that is a concern indeed, and I guess it's up to you, you know, how it works best, because, for instance, for AIDD reporting, you do not actually need this breakdown, so you can ignore it. For your land, if you know you need this breakdown, then you want to collect it, and then you'll be able to enter it. So it might be that case where it depends on, you need to know what program the activity is for, what reporting is going to be useful for, and make sure you complete the records accordingly. Are there any other questions on this topic? Any other examples that some want to give? They're not sure how to enter data?
I just wanted to confirm that we do, in fact, capture if we're a part of a committee or a board member or something, that is data that we do want to collect, right?
This is Kimberly calling from the Virgin Islands. I recall during the AECD conference that we had a lengthy discussion about when there were collaboratives that were planning in nature, and even if it was like planning around research or planning around future collaboratives or initiatives, I think the conclusion we came to was that we were not to enter that data in NERS.
But if unless, it was something where they're, well, in what cases then would one enter it?
Like the finished product at the research publication or the assessment tool release or the training, the actual training event, the data collection for a specific initiative. I think everybody was grumbling because it seemed like there was so much work that wasn't going to be accounted for, because we do have all of these collaborative steps that lead up to these big things, but that's what I understood after leaving that session.
Okay, because for years I was on a disability inclusion advisory committee for AmeriCorps, and we always included that, so that should not have been included?
I think like advisory panel activities, those are, I mean, that is probably more clearly technical assistance, you know, in terms of like you're adding your expertise to this, to not only one group, but a larger group to make something happen. But I think, for example, like if you're planning and strategizing towards a new research initiative, then some of those smaller meetings are not to be counted, is my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
But what about the question of serving on a board of something? Are we considering that technical assistance?
We do absolutely consider that technical assistance.
I would.
I see the ones that aren't included.
We do that in New Jersey, too.
As conference planning, for example, if you're going to have a big conference in the spring and you have, you know, 10 meetings around it, that doesn't get counted.
Correct.
So then
right.
What does get counted as technical assistance if you're just planning, if you're on a board and you're, or whatever the board is doing, like what would you consider as technical assistance? Because we don't do that here in Virginia, and I'm kind of confused.
If you have a board that is overseeing the activities of a project, say, that's helping to decide what the nurse family partnership is doing or whatever, I would call that technical assistance. If it's helping
absolutely
what
or
happens,
the
right?
Advising the state on how to implement the, you know, whatever, how the Bureau of Developmental Services should do whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, here in New Jersey that's how we count it too. Any involvement with any board committees, advisory councils, whether it's the day of the meeting or the prep for them, is counted as technical assistance.
Oh, you count the prep for the meeting as well?
Yes.
I would think so. That's all work.
Yeah.
It is, but we're not
well,
meant to
work,
capture.
But it's not, you know,
it's
I mean,
hours of work, right? So you just
but
like,
it's the prep that leads to the actual meeting or your presentation at the board, so all of that, like bottom line, it's affecting somebody or a committee. So it's all counted.
It is, but isn't
it,
this
leading
isn't this
to
the? Aren't we supposed to be capturing this more or less from the recipient's perspective, not our own? You know, like we don't have to show all the professional development that we do. We don't have to show all the prep work that we do to write something, because that is not really what is. It's more from the recipient's perspective, not inside the CEO, not inside the USED.
Yeah, for us, it's never the prep time. It's like if you could spend 100 hours preparing for a conference, but it's only 2 hours of the conference or 5 hours for the conference.
That's what we do as well, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's what we do here in Virginia. That's why I was a little, because that's not what AIDD, that's not what they're actually asking for. They're like you said, they're asking for from the recipient.
But
But to truly participate in that, in those discussions that you have, yeah, you have to prepare for it. You have to read the things that go, that are part of having a good discussion on a certain topic. So why not count that?
I think the question would be for Corinna, does it matter? Like, it, for us, I don't think that AIDD is looking at that.
No, but
if they're not, we don't track it.
Yeah. See, I am on the DD Council, and I chair a certain subgroup. Well, that's one activity that I count, that, you know, being the chair of a certain subgroup, work group, and all the preparation that goes into having a meeting on that subgroup or work group gets counted as part of technical assistance. For me, that's the way I report it. Any of the background information that I need to prepare for discussion of a certain topic as a in the DD Council that goes on, not only do I count the council meeting per se, but any preparation I need to have to participate, be a active participant in those discussions, are all counted. Things.
But that would almost be then quantifying everything we do every day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because everything we do every day is in preparation for some.
Everything we do gets counted as far as in years.
This is Larissa from Alaska, and my understanding from what Corinna said is that this isn't a desk audit. We're not tracking all of our time in NERS. We're simply tracking those activities from the logic model, the core functions. And so while we do recognize that we spend a lot of time preparing for things, I liked what someone said just a couple minutes ago about it's kind of from the recipient's viewpoint. The NERS data is what was given to them, and
right.
So you would count that rather than everything that you did, if you just count what they received. It or not, but it's not a desk audit, so we're not auditing all every minute that we're doing something.
Right, and it's also my understanding, too, that even as your report is written from each, you said, and when it's all said and done, AIDD isn't even really, they're not looking at that. They're not, you know, they're not going to say, well, Virginia has a lot less hours because they didn't include their prep time. What's going on?
But it's all part of cumulatively speaking how many hours are given in as it relates to technical assistance.
We don't count it here. I think
I'm talking about from a national standpoint, from all of our centers when when those numbers are pulled.
It sounds like we're all doing it a little bit different, so that would be skewed.
This is Karina, and I'll jump in here, and I have to agree. I know this has come up before. That the duration does refer strictly to the activity itself. It's not supposed to involve other work done, like prep work and everything. You know, because duration is just a simple number. And there's no way to differentiate or to separate the activity alone from prep time and other work that is done. So, you know, for a conference or a simple meeting, the meeting may be 2 hours, but if you put the prep time, maybe it's going to be 10 hours. However, when someone reviews like AIDD or someone looks on the other end, it looks like your meeting was 10 hours, not 2 hours, because there's no way to separate. So, plus, you know, prep work is different for, you know, between centers, between what people do. So to keep it consistent, it's truly just the activity itself that needs to be counted, or the duration for it. And in terms of prep work, you know, we discovered in the past for conference prep, I don't know if it's from someone on the call, but we discovered someone was even counting stuffing folders for a conference.
Oh.
So that's not the kind of activity that needs to be reported. That's why I'm saying it needs to be consistent. It's just the conference, just the meeting, just the length of the course that you want to report. Because for prep time, you don't know what people are going to report. And eventually, there's not going to be any ranking of who does more hours. I mean, honestly, we've never ever received a request from AIDD to look at the number of hours that centers spend on a topic or the number of activities centers do on a topic. Requests typically come to see who's doing something on a certain topic. That's what they look for. What's current in the network on a topic? And whether you have one record or 10 or you spent an hour or 25 hours on that, that doesn't matter. So just to clarify that duration indeed refers to strictly the activity you're reporting, not all other work done for it.
Thanks, Karina. That's helpful.
Sure. So was there anyone trying to ask a question?
Okay. I have a question that's not related to that.
Okay, go ahead.
I just have a question. When we enter, and I don't know if any other states have this. I know everybody kind of does their data entering differently. We have all of our staff, like our project directors, are in charge of entering their own data and stuff like that. So when we enter a activity that is training, which we do a lot of here in Virginia, one of the things that I've noticed, and this is basically really, Karina, just a question for you because it's more the continuing education community training that's kind of new to the database, is that there's the trainees total, and when you scroll down to types and numbers of participants, and at the very mm-hmm. top it's trainees total, which is actual trainees. So what we're having an issue with here is when people enter their numbers in, you know, I keep telling them to ignore that because we're the you said we're not the LEND. We don't have actual trainees that we're following. So I just want them to enter their, you know, the number of professionals or family members or whatever, and then it totals the participants at the end. What I'm having a problem with is people are seeing that trainees total at the top and wanting to put that total number in there and then breaking it down, and I'm having to go in and do a lot of fixing for our staff. Is there any way that could be, I know, probably for this year it can't, but that the trainees total could be separated out a little bit so it doesn't look so confusing when you're entering?
I will make a note of that. I see what you mean, and I think it stems from the core function of interdisciplinary pre-service preparation where you have the breakdown of disciplines.
Right.
And so, you know, in the other forms, that section is simply hidden, but that's why trainees total is listed as it is. I'm going to make a note of it and ask. I'm honestly not sure how difficult it is to make this change, I'll bring it up and maybe we can. We are going to make some changes, some fixes. So if it's a small thing and fit in the budget, which is the biggest concern, well,
we have another element for clarification since she mentioned that, and that is under collaborating agencies. Because no matter how many times I tell staff, they often check the USID, even though they mean ourselves.
Uh-huh.
So because it's, you know, the very first thing when you add an activity is you check USID or LEND or both, and so they think this is just another place to check USID. So even though I say no, it's not our USID, it's the other USID. If you could say, you know, it has USID, but you could have in parentheses, you know, not your own. I think.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Really help people remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. And this is Paula from Omaha. I think the only thing, I agree with that trainees total. It is very confusing, and I never use it. And I think just eliminating total would make a huge difference.
I agree. I think it's the word total that screws everybody up. And so then I see staff, and I'm like, oh, you're putting it in. And I keep telling them just ignore that. Don't. But I think it's the word total that's getting them every time.
Absolutely, because when I first started entering data, it confused me too. And
And I think that total really does throw people, and it might be just as simple as eliminating that word altogether.
Yeah, I think the only what, because this is trainees that are, you know, and maybe I'm wrong about this. This is trainees that you follow, that you, you know, as continuing. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, when, for example, we have speech pathologists here who and then they have students who come and do maybe a 16-week internship or rotation. And when they go over to the hospital and take them over and do training with them, you know, that person may be the only trainee, but they would also have other classroom students involved or professionals, and there might be a family member in there.
And so, what my staff is getting confused about, because they're just the USED staff, the LEND staff, they don't get confused on this, but the USED staff does, and what they're seeing is, well, you're saying trainees, well, I did a training on, you know, whatever the topic is. And, well, there were 12, or, you know, 35 people in the room. They were all trainees. And I'm like, no, that's not how it's defined. And that's where it's becoming very confusing.
Exactly. And that, and I have worked, we do have a couple people in our family, family office. They deal a lot with families, and they go out and do training and things like that. And, you know, there's professionals involved, but also family members and adults with disabilities. So it was, but there's also, they take their family trainee with them. So it was a little bit of a challenge to get them to understand how to break it down.
Okay. I'm glad we're not the only ones. That was
no, you're not alone.
Like, ah, okay, good. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear such productive discussions, but since time is going, I'd like to come back to the other items we had on the agenda to talk about them. And one is the trainee surveys, and the other is collecting trainee diversity data, race and ethnicity. And I'm talking about both of them at the same time simply because they relate to trainees. I should mention, because you might be expecting this update from me, we are working on eliminating the trainee survey question. Have you completed the training? Have you completed the training? Yes. And that the yes would trigger the opening of the survey, no would save a blank record. I know many of you had this problem in the past, so we are working on fixing that. It's no, we promise it happens sooner, but I'm hoping it will be by the end of this month. Once that is done, I will send that out. I will let everyone know, and I will also send out the first survey reminder. But I haven't sent it out, just waiting for this change to happen, so you do not start surveying trainees before this change happens.
Just a question then, Karina. So do not send out my survey letters to my trainees yet?
You can if you want to. The only thing is, you know, you might still get the blank records, blank surveys, because the question is there. It won't impact the surveying in that we're not going to delete whatever surveys are completed by making the change. It's just to, you know, to prevent try to avoid getting the blank survey. So if you trust that your trainees can complete them fully, then it's fine to send out the letters.
Okay, thank you.
So I think for the trainee surveys, one of the big topics is, you know, if you can share some tips on how to get your trainees to complete the survey. And for the trainee diversity, collecting the data, one of the questions is how to get the data, given that sometimes trainees do not give it, or it's hard because you get a piece of paper with not all the information. And, you know, so it's all about data collection and sharing tips on how to get that to have it to enter in years.
For us,
we require us, the trainees, to fill out that form as a trainee at the beginning of the program, and to make sure all the information is accurate and to make sure that we can find them, because a lot of our trainees go on externships and all that kind of stuff, have those requirements. We have them at the very last class before they leave us, fill out that follow-up in regards to who's their parents' information and all that, so that I can track them down if and when the time comes.
Yeah,
that's an excellent idea. Thank you.
Yeah, our center does an exit interview with every trainee, which updates their new mailing address.
It also helps, though, once you know, to get that permanent information, because a lot of our trainees, like I said, go all over the country, and it's so hard to track them down. So I find that having that permanent information as far as where their parents are, that's the best way to get them.
Right. I've been asking to make sure that the trainees have their personal email as well. A lot of them will include their university email if they're from University of Wisconsin, and I've been asking them to also include their Gmail or whatever, because I will email out the letters if possible, because that just seems to be a more efficient way with their personal email. Last year I got so many letters back, addresses, you know, no longer live here, yada. And so, but the email seemed to work really well if it was a personal email.
Yeah, and this is Katie from South Carolina. We've done a similar situation where we've had our trainees in the beginning of orientation fill out a whole data record that has all of the information. And then when it comes to race and ethnicity, as well as contact information and what they prefer to be contacted by throughout the program. And then we have them fill out that same form at the last possible meeting, and I talk to each of the trainees and assure them, you know, this is for me, because I'm the one that sends out the letters. I ask them for whatever email they check most frequently and a phone number that they will have with them. A lot of trainees have cell phones, so I ask them for that cell phone, and I promise never to use that cell phone unless they ignore my first 5 million emails. And so far we've been very, very fortunate, and we have not lost too many to attrition or anything, but that's always been helpful. And I preface it saying, you know, your cell phone is last resort. So if I'm calling the cell phone, you usually get that survey done that next day. So
this is Lori in Nashville. One thing I've done, and I don't know how much it's helped, but I collect the names of their advisors, so that when we get more like to the 5 or 10 year surveys, I can at least include the name of their advisor in my letter, so they have a clue of who I am and why I'm contacting them, because I wasn't at this, you said, 10 years ago, so they might be getting this email from me and not know who I am. But if I can drop a name that might ring a bell, sometimes that helps out.
Can I ask a general question to those on the phone? As I was stating, this is Tom from Arizona. We have a lot of graduates from our program, trainees, that are from, say, speech, PT, and OT. And in their last year, we usually get them in their last year at the university, you know, doing their didactic work, their classes and everything. And then they go on their externships. Well, you know, when we do our 1 year follow-up, they're still on their externships and kind of just completing them. They're still students. So when you ask those questions about impact and those leadership kind of questions, it really they don't know how to really respond to those. And I'm just wondering whether 1 year or if other centers are having that similar kind of feedback from the trainees
Or would it not be better to maybe start at a 2-year so we make sure that at least they're done with their externship?
This is Katie again from South Carolina, Len. We have almost the identical situation with our OT and PT students, and a lot of the feedback I've gotten from the students is that, you know, I filled out the survey, but it really didn't apply to me because I am still in school. And I've just assured them, you know, it's for everyone because we make such a big emphasis on the fact that we're so interdisciplinary and there's so many different levels that when I send out the survey, I try to let them know, answer all the questions to the best of your ability, and they might not seem like they matter, make sense to you right now in your career, but they probably will in 5 years when you're out in practice and it'll all make sense. So I still have them fill it out, but we've had the same exact issues with some of the same disciplines with the OTPT that do that externship after they graduate LEND.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions about surveying trainees or maybe collecting the trainee data, even other data than what I mentioned?
I just had one question just on a best practice on that. Are any of the programs that are on the call right now contacting any of your graduates prior to the survey, or is that the kind of one contact you have per year? I'd just be interested to see if those that are contacting them on a more regular basis have a better outcome.
This is Melissa in Arizona, and we send out things kind of all along. If it's something we think that would interest them, we email it out. We have their group email for each year, and we'll email it. So we kind of keep that contact going, and I think it helps because they always know who we are.
Right. So you do kind of like you almost add them to the faculty of, you know, this is information from LEND that might be interesting to you.
Yeah.
As you go, right. Mm-hmm. And we do this. Yeah. We do something similar. I just wasn't sure if I needed to go in and do more individual type or like more cohort type emails and. Versus the larger emails that go out to everyone. I was just curious.
I know with our LEND too, because we're giving them, you know, a significant stipend that we say, well, you know, this is also part of the reason that we're giving, you know, as part of your stipend support, know that, you know, this is, you know, a 2-semester LEND experience, but also you're part of this extended reporting piece. So I think knowing ahead of time that it's, you know, really tied to something like that also, I think, maybe prompt some of the people to have better responses.
This is Ava from New Jersey. This might be funny, but as a last resort last year, I used Facebook to find them, social media. So just a quick search, if they came up and I knew this is the person that I was exactly looking for, I send them a quick message, you know, explaining who I was and what I was waiting for. And that got their attention, and I got the surveys.
This is Lori in Nashville. I've definitely Googled former trainees and tracked
Twitter
them down.
Twitter and Facebook, and that was much more quicker than anything else I've done.
I've also used LinkedIn.
Sure. Any social media sites lately has been working out.
Yes, LinkedIn is very good, and I've had my students contact me, previous students contact me through LinkedIn, which has been very helpful.
So, like I said, when everything else fails, it's always social media.
Karina?
Yes?
This is Tom from Arizona again. Can I share some information that I just received related to trainee data and the ethnicity?
Sure.
The board of directors at the association is very, very interested, related to the diversity of our network. And one of the areas in which they wanted us to look at, when I say us, I'm talking about the Multicultural Council, is the data, the diversity data that we have for trainees. And I just received a couple of days ago a comparison in regards to 2013 data and 2014 data as it relates to trainees for both the USED and for LEND. And for your information, in the 2013 data that we have, we had 8% of our trainees not recording anything on as it relates to the race. And for ethnicity, it was 11%. In 2014, under race, there were 6% not recording anything, and ethnicity, 10%. So I think as we try to extend out from year to year and really capture to see how well our network is doing as it relates to diversity within our network, it's going to be more and more important that we have not only our staff and trainees fill it out, but it's going to be critical that we kind of encourage them as much as we can to fill out those data sets. I know the USED is going to be much tougher with the USED. For the LEND, it's mandatory that they fill it out. For USED, it's not. So we had that issue there. But as data coordinators, if you can encourage as much from your trainees, your staff, and your core function folks to have them encourage or themselves and also the people that they're responsible for to fill out those data sets, it would really help us now and in the future. That's all.
Thank you, Tom. That is helpful, and of course, I know centers work hard to get that the data, and hopefully, we'll see even better percentages in the future. I know we have just a couple more minutes, so is there any questions before we finish the call?